This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
I owe you nothing!
It's just money.
This is madness! Everybody just yells and screams at each other. Nobody's civil anymore!
That's not the kind of humor we do on this show.
Put that coffee down.
I drink your milkshake.
Now you're looking for the secret.
There can be only one.
Everything becomes chaos.
Can you dig it?
Brent Johnson, every time we kick these shows off, I always have a chuckle ready to go because, you know, we kind of brief ourselves like, oh, what are we going to talk about? And this week's just one of those weeks where it's like, how do we even get our head around it? Why do we even try to like have an agenda? There's just so much happening. You know, in the beginning of the week, we start tallying some ideas of things, but this one just kind of like snowballed. And here we are at the end of the week. Obviously, we're going to talk about CPI and some of the other stuff that's going on in markets, but I feel like this has to some extent been a week of madness. And the most maddening thing at the moment is what's going on, at least for me, with Biden. Do you have any thoughts on that before I kind of start sharing my opinion?
Well, I mean, I just think it's, you know, we get back to the hypocrisy again, right? I mean, Trump basically was, you know, taken to the woodshed because he had some classified documents at his home office or Mar-a-Lago or wherever it was. And yeah, I don't remember the exact quote from Biden, but it was something as, how could somebody be so careless, right? This is a very serious issue. And then sure enough, you know, they find, I don't know if they're similar documents, but they're both classified, right? In a closet at his, you know, schoolroom at campus where he was teaching a class, and then in a box in the garage next to his Corvette, apparently, right? But now this isn't an important deal. You know, it isn't right. So serious now. And so it's just, and it, listen, if the roles were reversed, if it had originally happened to Biden, of course the Republicans would have been outraged. And if it happened to Trump afterwards, they would have said no big deal. So it's the same thing for both sides, but it's just the hypocrisy and the endless cycle that just, it's hilarious.
Yeah, for me, it's, the thing is, when I have these conversations, it's such an eye-opener. I feel like I think just Biden in general, like when you look at Biden, if you have more than two functioning brain cells, you can tell that he's not making executive decisions and he for sure isn't running the country. So then immediately your thought process should be, well, then who is? And once you start getting into these types of hypocrisies, it's such a world of rules for thee, not for me. And it's such It's the optics are so clear that it's not what they say, it's what they do, right? And everything is a big joke, a big hypocrisy of like, well, whatever, man. Come on, man. It's no big deal. Right. It's just,
well, that's
just
so, my I don't garage. Know if you saw it. Edward Snowden tweeted it out and said, you know, I don't remember who he named somebody else that had spent some time in jail for a lesser offense, you know, or something to that effect. And anyway, yeah, it's just typical, right? I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, exactly. So
just part of the madness. Just part
it
of the
is
madness.
Part of, it is part of the madness. You know, I figure since we're going to get into markets to kind of roll into the latter part of the show, because there's so much to unpack there. So we start with a little madness. You know, maybe some people who like Biden who listen to this are already getting ready to be triggered. But I figure we might as well piss off a few more people, because earlier in the week we had one of the things that was kind of trending or going on was this interview with Zayhan and on the Joe Rogan podcast. Yeah. And talking about Bitcoin. And I think this is such a funny one to me, because the way people were responding to his points, to me at least, shows exactly, it's one of those dances, right? Where it's like, he makes a point, the way people respond emphasizes his point, yet the people responding in that way, you know, the Bitcoin maximalists and whatnot, don't even realize that they're strengthening the point. And I did a podcast with Mike Green way back 2 years ago, and he talks about gold as money and the only real reason why it was money. And then he goes into, you know, the idea of, you know, why Bitcoin's not going to really work, mainly because it's inelastic. And that's kind of the point, you know, Zayhan was making here, and people just could not handle it. And the reactions to it were, I guess you could say, maddening. Did you have a chance to watch some of that conversation or the responses going on?
Yeah, I watched some of it. I didn't watch all of it, but I know the part you're talking about. And this is actually a point, even though I'm not a big Bitcoin proponent, this is a point. And in general, I agree with a lot of the things that Zayhan says. This is actually a point. The point I'm going to mention is one thing where I actually disagree with him, where he says there's not enough of it to go around, you need a currency that expands, et cetera, et cetera. And right. This argument has been made several times with gold, why gold could not work. Now, it doesn't explain why they can't work. It does explain to a certain extent some limitations that would be involved, but it doesn't mean it can't work, because in order to get more exposure, all you have to do is have the price go up. So, you know, to say that there's not enough gold in the world at $1,800 there's not, but at $18,000 there's a lot more gold. Same thing with Bitcoin, right? At $18,000 Bitcoin, there's not enough gold to support gold, or there's not enough Bitcoin to support global trade. At $180,000 or $1.8 million, maybe there's plenty of Bitcoin. Now, that's not an advocacy for either one of those, and I'm not saying that either one of those are going to those prices, but I do think that that's an area that he gets wrong, as far as there's just not enough of it. But I did also see the replies, you know, to it. And to your point, it is funny that I just always laugh when people just lose their mind, right? When they just can't handle what somebody else is saying. I mean, at the end of the day, the guy was invited on Joe Rogan to give his opinion. You can't right. expect him to go in there and give your opinion, right? I mean, that would be ridiculous. Right. And then the idea that you just haven't spent enough time. I saw somebody said, just spend 50 hours studying Bitcoin and you'll finally get it. And it goes back to this thing that, you know, your belief is so strong that if you just spent enough time, you have to agree with me, you know, right. And you don't have to agree with the other person. And he obviously doesn't. And listen, whether you think Zayhan is a smart guy or a charlatan, I don't really care. But, you know, the idea that all you have to do is spend a few more hours on Bitcoin and you'll all of a sudden, you know, be a Bitcoin evangelist is just, that's not correct.
Well, and the Joe Rogan podcast is already 17 hours long, so I don't think, you know, Zayhan has much time or they were really going to be able to give it any more coverage than they did. You know, but it goes, speaking of gold and Bitcoin and the idea of elasticity, and I think it's such an important thing to realize. The video clip that was being run over and over, I think, was just so important, because it really highlights the point that if you're early to the game, which is so much, and I'm not against crypto, I have Bitcoin, I think there's tons of merit and opportunity there, but let's be clear, when the value proposition is it's still early, buy and hodl until everyone else wants to get in, I don't really see the value add there. It feels almost to the extent of like the same way people try to push you into multi-level marketing. It's like, are you really creating a value add for society? Or are you just creating a downline of people who are creating a downline of people? And so to that extent, I think when, as an entrepreneur personally, and when you look at how the world's been able to expand and grow so quickly, and even right now I'm in Sydney, and every time I go into the city and go into the harbor, and there's so much development going on, it makes you scratch your head and be like, how is this possible? It's possible because of credit. You know, the money right. doesn't actually exist there. So we've been able to, yes, there's been tons of abuse of credit. We know that's why we're in the environment we're in right now. And, and you know, we get to talk about dollar milkshakes. But it's such an important aspect, not only to forward society and help us grow and build our visions, but if you get something wrong, if we live in a finite system like a 21 million Bitcoin world, you're financially wiped out. There's no way to recover from that. And I think that's so important that a lot of people don't understand who perhaps aren't risk takers. Their version of risk is dollar cost averaging into some ideology like gold or Bitcoin. When you're a true risk taker, when you're putting your idea and life on the line, you need to be able to reset or even within that vision, recalibrate and pivot. And I think that's, you know, what makes the idea of elastic money so important. The problem is, and you've mentioned this, I think, even just last week, is the abuses that we've seen through central banking, et cetera. That's what people get emotional about, and they have this distaste and hatred for it, where they feel like the whole system needs to be rewritten. And it's like, no, we don't have capitalism. We have crony capitalism, and we have this dysfunctional, centralized system. So I didn't mean to get on a soapbox there, but I am standing up today for this show.
Well, let me make one additional point on top of it. And for those who say that, you know, either gold or Bitcoin would not inhibit the extension of credit, well, of course it would. That's the whole reason people want gold or Bitcoin to be money, is they want it to be hard. They want it to not be easily extendable, right? The whole point of having a gold standard or a Bitcoin standard or whatever it is to inhibit the excess increase of credit. So the idea that it wouldn't inhibit it takes away one of the whole arguments for having it to begin with. Anyway, we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, so but on the gold topic, we had an article that was shared by Ron Paul, and Ron Paul is, you know, a big gold proponent. And this goes to the point of gold, but it also goes to the point of narratives, which we've talked about in an earlier show, because this entire article coming from Ron Paul basically justifies the dollar milkshake theory, or at least, you know, gives it its place on the stage, because there's a subheading in this article that says the dollar's strong, and then in parentheses, but only in comparison. So it shows you like a, you know, you could say something like that, and it's not as impactful as using a scene from There Will Be Blood and, you know, articulating what the dollar milkshake theory actually is. But there it is. You know, someone, again, Brent Johnson, he has this idea, you know, he articulates it well, and everyone seems to forget the Highlander part, right? There can be only one, and at the end of the day, we'll see who that gets to be. But it's funny when you have these guys that are hard money proponents in their own little, you know, not sneaky way, but they kind of sneak these little lines in there like, yeah, okay, well, maybe Brent's right for now.
Well, the interesting part for me has been, so I've been consistent through the whole time. I've always said it was the dollar versus other currencies, that the dollar would be the last currency standing other than gold. Gold and dollars would rise together, and then all the others would fall away, and then ultimately gold would win. I've said from the very beginning that gold will win this battle. And when I first started kind of this thesis, people would say, and a lot of times I have so many presentations where DXY is highlighted, and I would say that DXY, and after 2020, people said DXY will never go back to 102. And I would say, yes, it would. No, it won't. Well, then now that DXY did go past 102 and is actually still above 102 today, despite the huge pullback we've had over the last couple of months, then last year the narrative started shifting. Well, maybe the DXY will go higher, but that's only versus other currencies. It's not actually strong versus things. Okay, fine, but you know, part of the whole milkshake theory said we will get into an environment where gold goes up, the Dow goes up, and the dollar goes up, all in unison. The only way for that to happen is if the dollar is losing value versus gold and equities, but it's gaining versus everything else. So, you know, it's interesting to see the transition of the debate. I always find it kind of fun to kind of, you know, do the back and forth. But, you know, the other thing I would always say is, you know, if you're walking down the street and you see a 7 foot tall guy walk by and you say, wow, that guy's tall. Nobody says, no, he's not compared to that building, you know, or nobody says, you know, people say Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player ever. Yeah, but he couldn't beat the Secretariat around, you know, the track at Churchill Downs. Well, yeah, because you're not comparing guys to buildings and you're not comparing basketball players to horses. Typically, when you compare things, you compare them to their peers. So when I say the dollar is the best currency, I'm talking about versus the other currencies. Anyway.
Yeah, you started to unpack a potential new chapter of the dollar milkshake theory. We now it becomes the Jordan horse racing theory to an extent. Well, you'll have to work on that. You'll have to refine that a little bit.
Yeah.
So look, at the end of the week here, we had all eyes on CPI. You know, the funny thing about CPI, well, all of these reports and data sets, a lot of times it gets skewed based on expectations. So what do you think about CPI today at its core versus, you know, comparing it to expectations, you know, using another one of these, like comparing Jordan to a horse, like, you know, sometimes you got to just look at the data for what it is. What are your thoughts on CPI overall?
Well, overall, I mean, the CPI is slow. It's still rising, but it's slowing, right? The pace is slowing. And that is good news for people who don't want inflation to be high. That's good news. It's coming down. Now it's, you know, you have to be very careful with this because you don't want the economy to crash and inflation to go from 10% to 0% immediately, because that could cause all, or because it might not stop at zero, right? You might get into massive deflation. And so the Fed is trying to cause or trying to create a soft landing. Or theoretically, that's what they're trying to do. So if that's what they're trying to do, and if that's, you know, what you would like to see, then the Fed's actually doing a pretty good job. They're getting, you know, asset prices have remained okay. They're down from where they were, they're all their all-time highs, but they haven't completely collapsed. Inflation's on its way down. Interest rates are higher now. If you have your money in the bank, you're actually getting a return on it. You know, you can get 4% for holding the, you know, the short-term treasury or whatever it is. So I think that they're making progress, but going towards the absolute level versus expectations, you know, we have to kind of, when we talk about this, we have to say, well, what are we talking about in relation to? And what I mean by that is, if you're just a saver who has your money in the bank and you go to work every day and you put your money in the bank, then yeah, it's coming down is good, but you actually want it to stop inflating away, right? But if you're an investor and you're placing capital into capital markets, they don't trade on absolute values. They trade on expectations, right? And so as expectations have come down and as rate hike, so as inflation expectations have started to fall and as rate hike expectations have started to fall, you've seen capital markets react in a big way. I mean, last year, the reason the dollar went up so much last year was because of rate hike expectations and the speed with which they were rising. Now, in late September, when it peaked, and I even sent out a tweet the morning of the high saying, hey, this is probably the time where the dollar's going to pause and pull back. And the reason I said that, it wasn't just out of the blue, it's because inflation expectations were kind of, you know, peaking, I felt. It was probably that, not that they were going to stop doing rate hikes, but that the pace of rate hikes would probably slow. And as the pace of rate hikes probably slowed, the expectations for further rate hikes would probably slow. And then you would get a pullback in the dollar versus the other currencies. And that's exactly what we've seen. Now, I'm the first to admit that I didn't think it would, we're at 103, or no, we're at 102, a little over 102. I thought it would pull back to the 105 range, maybe, you know, 104, 106, kind of in that range. We're kind of now down below that. So it'll be interesting to see what expectations going forward are. If expectations are that they will continue to slow rate hikes and maybe even do no more rate hikes, while the expectations for the ECB and the BOJ are to do rate hikes, then I would expect the dollar to continue to fall off. If, however, they come out and, you know, Powell kind of throws cold water on all of this and says, hey, we still have a long way to go, rate hikes are going to continue higher, and we get a higher inflationary print a month from now or whatever it is, then you're going to see the dollar go higher. So anyway, that's kind of that was a long kind of ramble on it, but that's my thoughts on CPI.
The idea of the BOJ raising rates is just a comedy in itself. That's the ultimate.
Well, I don't know if you saw this. So we've talked a lot about the BOJ over the last, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 episodes. And they haven't said that they're going to raise rates, but they did let the band of which where rates could swing widen. Well, they sent out a message, came out yesterday. Hey, we're going to have to review all of this, right? We want to make sure there's no, market dislocations as a result of it. And of, you know, the market again thought, okay, well they're going to raise rates rather than just have, and so the yen screamed higher again. I think this is all going to reverse. I think this idea that Japan is going to have much higher rates and that and it's not going to cause havoc, I think is wrong. We'll see. Maybe I'll be wrong. I've been wrong many times before, but on this one, I don't think I am.
Well, and again, one of the things we talked about before when we were unpacking the Japan situation is the idea that these are very coordinated decisions. Nothing just kind of, central bankers aren't Donald Trump. They're not sitting there with Twitter open, just shooting off the cuff. So there's definitely been some thought into how anything they would say or do would affect markets. And so potentially some of this is not their base case, right? Some of the response is not what they were hoping, and now they're trying to recalibrate. But you know, some
of the flip side of it, let me say one more thing before I forget. The flip side of it is the reason that rates are now starting to sort of push higher in Japan is that for the first time in 30 years or whatever the number is, they're finally starting to get some inflation. They've been trying to generate inflation for decades and have never gotten it. And now they're starting to get a few little hints of it. And now after trying for 30 years and they start to get a few little hints of it, everybody thinks that they're automatically going to shut it down. Now, again, maybe they will, but I think it's kind of funny to think, but you've been trying to do something for 30 years. You're finally getting a little bit of success and you automatically institute a program to stop it. So, yeah, we'll see.
Look, so at the beginning of the show, we are talking about Biden. And my thought on that was more general in that, like, don't necessarily believe what they say, follow more what they do. So in the context of Japan, for 3 decades or more, trying to get inflation feels very much of like what they say versus what they actually do. If, you know, I think it was last week you talked about, okay, they widened this band and then they immediately went in and did open market operations to control rates of roughly how many trillion yen, right? So if the BOJ really wanted inflation, they wouldn't be printing $1 trillion on a day. They'd be printing $100 trillion on a day. So it's one of those things of like pushing back against some of those ideas and those narratives. Do they really want inflation? And if they did, they could get it, right? Have they really been struggling it, or are they just trying to play this Goldilocks thing? Now, caveat, you know, 20 minutes in, that's kind of, you know, dropping a bomb to unpack. But I just wanted to kind of add that to your point that, yeah, you know, it's definitely looking at these things in a contrarian fashion, right? If they want inflation and now they're starting to get it, don't be foolish to think they're suddenly going to shut the door on it. And to the contrary of that, if they really wanted inflation, you know, they could load their bazookas a lot more than they have been. And maybe they still will, who knows? But because inflation has created the impact it has year over year, it doesn't look like any central bank wants to give off that impression that that's their goal. Now, to unpack something else that's kind of related to what you just said as far as like BOJ, the dollar milkshake theory, etc. Now that you have actual yield that you can generate short term, I mean, look how inverted the curve is, and go out on the 3 month and get 4%, right? You're starting to see outflows from banks because depositors are looking at the situation and be like, well, why am I going to give you my money for a month, 2 months, a year and get nothing when I can give it to the US government, which is truly risk-free, and get 4%. And that's starting to create some issues where banks can't do that because they took that liquidity, those deposits, and made investments that if they marked to market right now, the bonds they bought at 50 basis points would be a real loss. So that kind of adds to one of the questions that we had from one of our viewers. John asked, how do these rate hikes affect the euro dollar market. And I figured I'd interlude into that question because it's already affecting the US credit markets.
Well, so it doesn't. So I remember getting that to the question, and I appreciate to the viewer for sending it in. It's a very good question. So when the US raises rates, it doesn't automatically force those in the euro dollar market to raise rates. But what it does is it puts pressure on the US dollar to go higher. And so if you, let's say you borrowed $1 million in yen, or you're a yen based investor and you borrowed $1 million. And then the Fed starts hiking rates and all of a sudden the dollar goes up 20% versus the yen, which is what happened last year. Well, now as the yen based investor, it's not so much that the interest rate has been raised on you. It's just that the principal that you now owe has gone from $1 million to $1.2 million, essentially, right? Because it's harder for you to pay off the principal that you borrowed. So it's not so much that rate hikes are happening overseas, but they can, you know, as the risk-free rate rises, or as the rates in the U.S. rise, you know, it does translate, you know, when other parts of the world get U.S. dollar funding, and then they make loans on top of that, as their cost of funding goes up, you know, they will pass those costs on to the customers as well. So if it's a long-term fixed rate, it's probably not going to impact a foreigner from an interest rate perspective. But if it's a floating rate or a short-term rate that resets higher, then that could have dramatic effects in the euro dollar market. But the Fed raising rates, the reason that it impacts the euro dollar market so much is it puts upward pressure on the price of the dollar, which just makes the overall debt servicing even harder.
So look, we have covered the craziness and hypocrisy in politics. We covered the craziness, and one might argue hypocrisy, of our hard money friends with Bitcoin and gold. We talked a little bit about Japan again, dollar milkshake, euro dollar markets. Before we wrap up here, is there anything you want to punctuate this episode with?
No, I really just wanted to say hi to that one viewer who had such nice things to say about me. I don't remember what I had said out, but he sent me a note that said, "You are so nice and you're always right. I really appreciate everything you do. You seem like a really smart guy." I thought that was just that just made my week.
Yeah, so what I'll
make, maybe,
I'll
make sure. maybe we can throw up a copy of that for
yeah,
people to see.
I will. And if you're listening on audio, just, you know, go to YouTube at some point and go to the end of the podcast so you can see the actual very kind, warm-hearted quote Brent received. So on that note, man, I appreciate you again. A good week of data, a good week of chatting with you about it here. And for anyone who's new to the show or not new to the show, please interact with us, whether it's complimentary or not. Milkshakes Pod on Twitter, Milkshakes Pod on YouTube, milkshakespod.com. Easy to find. We love chatting back with you. So please come join the conversation. And until then, thanks for joining us. And Brent, I'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you next week. Mm-hmm.